Hi everyone, welcome to English for You. I'm Tiffany.
And I'm Pat.
And today we're going to be taking a look at the themes and the person who wrote the story that we've read in the past 2 days.
Yeah, now, the curious incident of the dog in the nighttime.
That's right. So just to, you know, quickly talk about the story again. Remember, Christopher was a 15-year-old boy who had autism, and that means he has problems interacting with other people.
Yeah. Now, he sets out to solve the murder of his neighbor's dog, and this leads him to find out his mom isn't dead, like his dad had told him, but is really alive and living in London. And Christopher's dad, Ed, had lied about it because what really happened was his mum ran off with a neighbour.
Whoa, yeah. And then that kind of just set a lot of things off for Christopher. His life got turned upside down. Christopher also learned that Ed killed the dog, the neighbor's dog, and he eventually goes to London to look for his mom, and when he was there, she found out that their relationship ended because Mr. Shears didn't want Christopher living with them, so... You know, a lot of things happened to him.
And he came back in the end. He took his math test. His mum came back to live in the same town as him. He was terrified, though, when he had to meet his father again.
But, you know, his dad felt really bad about what happened, so he tried to make up for it and say sorry to him. So he bought him a dog, and he wants to win back Christopher's trust. Now, in the end of the story, we learn that Christopher starts to feel really optimistic or very positive about all the new things and wonderful things that are happening in his life. For example, he passed his test. He found his mom. He solved the murder of the dog, and he even wrote a book about it, and he was learning how to do many things on his own as well.
Okay, so today we're going to learn about the author of the book and talk about some of the themes in it.
Reading.
The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime was written by British author Mark Haddon. It was his first book and won him lots of praise and a number of awards. Since then, Haddon has written other books as well as poetry and TV scripts. However, he's never quite matched the success of his first novel. The most notable thing about the book is that the narrator is a teenager with an autism spectrum disorder. This affects how he sees the world and reacts to people. Medical professionals have handed it to Haddon for his realistic approach. The book helps readers to understand Christopher's motivations and behavior. Haddon stresses that he's no expert on these disorders. One thing's clear from the book: these disorders needn't be something that holds people back. In addition, the story is a classic coming-of-age tale. Christopher must take responsibility, overcome difficulties, and act like an adult. In doing so, he learns things about himself and the world. Thanks to the decisions he makes and the experiences he has, he's a stronger person by the end of the book.
So we see that The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, that is the book, was written by British author Mark Haddon.
Let's learn more about him. It says, it was his first book and won him lots of praise and a number of awards. So, wow, that's pretty amazing.
For the first go,
the first book you write, a lot of people enjoyed it, and plus he got a number of awards.
So, we just used the phrase, a number of. He won a number of awards. We can use this phrase, a number of, to mean more than one or two. So, it could be four, could be five. We don't exactly know. We use the phrase a number of, like we use some or a few or several, to mean that it was more than one, probably not more than 10, but we don't know the exact number. Okay, now since that sort of big first success, Haddon has written other books as well as poetry and TV scripts.
Wow.
Now, here we use the word script, and the script is all the words for a play, for a TV show, for a movie. So it's all the things that the characters say, plus a few kind of directions about what they do, where they move, where the scene takes place. And it's that that the actors learn, that's what they learn the words for, and that's what the director uses to figure out how we're going to shoot it all. But you can sort of call it the book for the movie and the play, but the correct word for it is a script.
Because, of course, it includes directions and actions
as well. Yeah, and not a lot of descriptions of people and what they wear and what they're thinking, but a lot of words to what they're saying.
Next, it says, however, he's never quite matched the success of his first novel. So, Min learned that, yes, he's been writing other things as well, but this book that we read today was one of his most successful ones.
Yeah, it is his most successful one so far, and it is difficult to follow up on something that's that big and that popular, but hopefully he'll get a chance to do it at some point. Now, as we've been going through and talking about the main character and all the sort of problems and difficulties he has, then it's pretty obvious, as the article says, the most notable thing about the book is that the narrator is a teenager with an autism spectrum disorder. So remember, that means he has problems interacting with other people, he's sees the world very literally, so he doesn't understand a lot of language and he doesn't understand the way other people think and are reacting and the things they say and so on. So it makes it very notable. It's interesting to read this kind of book. Now, the word notable is an adjective, and it's a characteristic that's easy to notice. So something is notable, it's easy to notice because of its quality or its special features. And because of this, it's often noted and mentioned by other people. It's the sort of thing people will say, oh, this is good, this is the main point of it, we can talk about it. This is what sort of sets it apart and makes it easy for people to see it and say, hey, this is good for this reason.
And remember, Mark, he does not have autism, so writing it in that point of view was actually really, really, really made the story really special. So he, remember, the narrator of the story was someone who did suffer from autism. Now, a narrator is a person who tells the story, and they're basically observing the story from afar. They're not saying, oh, I did this, I did that.
They talk
about
the people. The narrator is the...
There are
different ways of doing it. The narrator, you can sort of have an overall narrator, but you can also have a narrator who's doing the I went here, I did this. And they're called first person and third person. First person story is the I sort of thing, like I went here, I did this stuff, I saw this thing, I felt this. Third person is the, Tiffany went here, Tiffany did this stuff, Tiffany felt angry, Tiffany felt happy. So that's the difference between first and third. There is a second, but it's you. So when you're reading, it says you do this, you see this, you walk here. It's not very common to see that in literature. It's very difficult to write that kind of book. It can happen, but you don't often see second person. Books you will read are mostly either first or third. Okay, so that's a narrator, the storyteller. And because he's got this disorder, we see in the article, this affects how he sees the world and reacts to people.
Next it says, medical professionals have handed it to Haddon for his realistic approach. So even people in, professionals, they say, wow, you did a really good job showing what it is like to have autism, or showing what it's like for someone to have autism. Now, a professional is just someone who does a job that requires maybe a really special training. You need like a specific kind of education or a very specific skill. And this is basically someone who is very, very good at what they're doing. For example,
and it's their main job, right?
Exactly.
It's what they're paid to do.
For example, we can say, you shouldn't treat that broken bone by yourself. Instead, you should see a professional. You should see someone who is trained to take care of broken bones.
Yeah, an actual doctor or nurse or something like that. So a medical professional would be these sort of doctors and experts in psychology and behavior and other things like that. And these medical professionals, they hand it to Mark Haddon for what he did. And this phrase, to hand something to someone, this is today's shortcut for you. So let's watch our video to check out what it means and how we can use it.
Shortcut for you.
How was your meeting at work?
Great. Sales are up by 45% this quarter.
That's excellent.
Our new sales manager has really improved business. I've got to hand it to her.
What do you have to hand to her?
I won't actually hand her anything. To hand it to somebody means to give that person credit or praise for something.
I see. To hand it to somebody means 佩服某人.
Exactly.
I have to hand it to you for teaching me all of these English phrases.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
So if you hand it to somebody, this is basically meaning to say that this person, you're handing it to them because they've been very successful or very skillful in what they did, and you're acknowledging that somebody has a particular ability or they have achieved something good. You're saying basically, well done, you know, I have to hand it to you, that was great.
Mm-hmm. So he had a really realistic approach to the way someone probably would behave if they have autism. Now, an approach is a way of dealing with something or a way of doing or thinking about something. For example, we can say the teachers used a positive approach to encourage students to study more. So they used like a more positive way to say, okay, guys, you should try to study instead of making people feel like, oh, man, I got to do that.
Yeah, no, scaring them like, oh, no, if I fail, then it'll be bad. Instead, well, if you succeed, it'll be good. That's a better approach. So because this book, as Tiffany said, it's narrated by somebody with this problem, because of that, this book helps readers to understand Christopher's motivations and behavior. So your motivations, these are the reasons, could be one reason, could be multiple reasons, why a person does something. Your motivation makes you act in a certain way. So it's basically we're talking about the why, the reasons. Here's an example. I don't understand Ivy's motivation for quitting her job. She was working for a good company and making a decent amount of money.
Mm.
So, okay, she's not quitting because she's, you know, unhappy with the job or because it's not a good job. So she seems to be, you know, the company's nice. She's getting paid well. I don't understand why. I don't understand the reason. I don't understand the motivation for her quitting. Mm-hmm. And so motivation is a bit different from behavior.
Mm-hmm. Because behavior is a noun and it means the way a person or even an animal can act. It's basically how they behave. For example, scientists are studying the behavior of monkeys to see if they're similar to humans. So a behavior can be things like maybe if you know, you wake up in the morning and you're very angry, there's a reason for the way you act that way.
Yeah,
basically.
So that'll be your behavior. You're behaving in an angry way, but your motivation might be, I hate mornings.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't like getting up. I haven't had a coffee yet. So those are motivations, and the behavior is how you act to other people and what you do. So this is really great for this guy, Mark Haddon. People are talking about how good he is, but we see that Haddon stresses that he's no expert on these disorders.
Right.
So basically saying, yeah, thank you for the praise, but, you know, parents, teachers, doctors, please understand, I'm a writer, I'm not an expert on these, so, you know, don't thank you, but it's not my best thing. It's not my professional job.
Yeah, remember, he's a writer. He didn't go to school studying this as well. So next it says, one thing's clear from the book, these disorders needn't be something that holds people back. All right, so let's take a look at how we can use needn't. Needn't is just short for need not. Now what you can do is you can put a subject plus need not, or you can shorten it to needn't, N-E-E-D, and apostrophe T, and plus your verb. Now remember, need here is used as a helping verb here. It can be used as a helping verb here. But when you use it as a helping verb, don't forget that your verb at the end has to be in its base form, and you don't have to change it to past tense. For example, we can say, you needn't pay first. Okay, so remember, pay here is still in its original form. And this is basically means you don't need to pay first.
So yeah, need not, don't need to. And that's what we're saying. One of the lessons of this book is, even if people have an autism spectrum disorder and they have trouble interacting or communicating, then that's not doesn't have to hold them back and limit what they can do in their lives. So that's kind of one idea. We next see that, in addition, the story is a classic coming of age tale. So there are a lot of stories out there like this, and it's all about the kind of progress from being a child who has lots of things done for you to a grown-up who is able to do things and take responsibility and all that stuff and sort of be more in control. And there are, you know, even to a certain extent, Harry Potter is the early, you know, coming of age. It's about growing, changing, becoming a grown-up.
Yeah, exactly. So next it says, Christopher must take responsibility, overcome difficulties, and act like an adult. You know, especially all the things that he went through, right, in the story. He had to take lots of responsibility. Now, responsibility is a noun, and it means like a job, a duty, or task you're supposed to do, and other people expect you to do it well. So, for example, your responsibility as a student is to graduate from school or to get good grades. For adults, like your parents or even for us, our responsibilities, we have many, but then some of them can be things like, you know, making money and taking care of, your parents take care of you, or, you know,
you
adults
take care of,
yourself, or we take care of our parents and things like that. These are just your responsibilities.
Yeah, you could have job responsibilities, personal responsibilities, and all sorts.
Okay, we can use in a sentence like this. We can say, Ms. Wong gave me the responsibility to collect everyone's report at the end of class.
So we, as well as taking responsibility, we saw that Christopher had to overcome things. Overcome means to deal with a problem or a difficulty successfully. It could also mean to defeat an opponent. You could have one boxer overcoming another in a boxing match. But normally it means you're in a difficult situation, but you come out of it okay. Here's another example. It took Dennis many years to overcome his fear of flying and get onto an airplane.
Right, and in doing so, and in Christopher, you know, having all these experiences, the article then says, in doing so, he learns things about himself and the world. So Christopher learned a lot of things about himself and what he can and cannot do, and he learned a little bit more about reality, because I would imagine he probably spent most of his life in Swindon. He didn't really get out much.
So and sort of learning about his own, maybe a bit about his own condition and how to deal with the world a little better. And we see in the article that thanks to the decisions he makes and the experiences he has, he's a stronger person by the end of the book. So that's very important, the idea of, in a story, that people have to take decisions and actually do these things, and that is how you would grow. If you don't take the decisions, if you leave it to other people, you're never really going to change and become a stronger person. So something could happen to you and make you stronger, but you happening to the world makes you stronger. So remember that and always think, okay, I'm the one who's in charge, I'm in control, I'm going to make this decision and do something, and that'll make you a stronger person usually, and that'll give you a better idea how to deal with the world, just like Christopher does. Okay, so that brings us to the end of this three-part article, but we're not quite finished. We've got one more For You Chat question to do, so let's go to that right now.
For You Chat.
All right, so our For You Chat question for today is, what's one experience you've had that helped you grow up?
Ooh, let me see. I mean, obviously, there's been a few. Certainly, it could be anything from coming to Taiwan to getting married in some ways would help a lot, or getting into the state where you think, I want to get married is a, you know, that
it's a
decision.
Phase,
yeah. But probably most of all, it would be the experience of going to university in a different city to where I'd grown up and where my parents lived and so on. It wasn't far away. It was about an hour on the train from my home city, but it meant that that's it. I'm now responsible for wash. You know, I'd already started to wash my own clothes, but I also had to learn a bit more about managing money, about cooking my own food, shopping, cleaning up my own stuff, looking after my own study schedule a lot more instead of letting the teachers tell me what to do. So that going to university, I'd say, is the, and I think that's probably true for everyone, it's an experience that does help you grow up start taking responsibility, start overcoming difficulties.
Yeah, especially if you're going to school in a different city or a different country.
A different country, yeah.
I think you grow up really fast.
How about you? What's...
For me, I think it would just be maybe living abroad in different places.
That's like, true. You went you know, to lived in the UK for, what, a year and a half or
something? Yeah, roughly around that. And, you know, I grew up in the States and I moved to Taiwan. And that was also a different experience for me as well. Growing up in the States is so different than growing up in Taiwan, you know, the cultural difference. Mm-hmm. It was quite a bit of a shock for me, but it really did help me grow up. I met a lot of amazing people and I learned to, you know, speak Chinese better. Mm-hmm. And yeah, well, I think just overall traveling can help you also learn
Absolutely.
To grow up.
Yeah. So what about you guys? I mean, if you guys are high school students, then maybe you've still got a lot of these experiences in front of you, but maybe you've already had a few. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's taking care of a pet.
Yeah, or...
That would show you some responsibility. I mean, when I was about, I think it was either 13 or 15, my parents mm-hmm. said, that's it, you're washing your own clothes now. Well, you're old enough. We're not going to come and take your dirty washing mm-hmm. and wash it. You've got to bring it down, put it in the machine, wash it, hang it up, and deal with that yourself.
Wow.
So that's it, and you know, mm-hmm. that starts the ball rolling. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say that helped, that turned me into an adult overnight, but it certainly started me thinking in the right mm-hmm. way. So
that's
what about
right.
you guys? Have you started to feel, I'm different now, I'm more grown up than what I was before? Could be going to senior high school, could be anything. Have a talk about it, share your ideas, and thank you very much for watching the two of us today. For English for You, I'm Pat.
I'm Tiffany.
Talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime was written by British author Mark Haddon. It was his first book and won him lots of praise and a number of awards. Since then, Haddon has written other books as well as poetry and TV scripts. However, he's never quite matched the success of his first novel. The most notable thing about the book is that the narrator is a teenager with an autism spectrum disorder. This affects how he sees the world and reacts to people. Medical professionals have handed it to Haddon for his realistic approach. The book helps readers to understand Christopher's motivations and behavior. Haddon stresses that he's no expert on these disorders. One thing's clear from the book: these disorders needn't be something that holds people back. In addition, the story is a classic coming-of-age tale. Christopher must take responsibility, overcome difficulties, and act like an adult. In doing so, he learns things about himself and the world. Thanks to the decisions he makes and the experiences he has, he's a stronger person by the end of the book.
Vocabulary Review. Professional. I realized I couldn't decorate the house by myself. I needed to hire some professionals. Approach. Dave needed to get through the locked door, so he used the direct approach. He broke it down with a big hammer. Motivation. The most difficult crimes to solve are those without any obvious motivations. Behavior. Peter's father warned him to be on his best behavior for his first day at the new school. Responsibility. My mother is in charge of the dentist's clinic. Everything is her responsibility. Overcome. After a long struggle, Stephen overcame his drinking problems with the help of his friends and family.